I'm Roland Dye, and this is the third year now that we've been running this Hiroshima Nagasaki Peace Gathering in Castle Park. So I'm the coordinator, so generally getting all the equipment together and also organising the programme of talks and workshops which have run over the four afternoons of the event. So this ran from Saturday the 6th through to Tuesday the 9th of August. That's Hiroshima Day to Nagasaki Day.
I mean, it's quite an ambitious program, 4 days of events. Can you just pick out a couple of the main events? I mean, I think maybe we should start, though, about talking about the die-ins.
Yeah, sure. So in remembrance of Hiroshima and then Nagasaki, we do die-ins at the precise times that the bombs were dropped. So the Hiroshima was bombed at 8:15 on the 6th of August. So we do a die-in. We've got a giant, massive 3 meter square never again mushroom cloud banner that we hoist onto a tree in Castle Park, and about a dozen people came along on Saturday morning. We do a diary, a siren, a narration of what the bomb was all about, how long it took to fall, what happened when it exploded.
Well, I don't want to be too finickety about this, but surely the actual time would be something like midnight our time, early morning over in Japan.
Well, we're working on local time in Japan when the bomb was dropped. Yeah.
Okay. I know that the announcement by President Truman at the time said that Hiroshima was a military base.
Very, very minor military base. There was relatively small contingent of military there, as they would have been in every Japanese town. In fact, they chose cities that had been relatively untouched by previous bombing. These were experiments. The Allies were actually prolonging the war by insisting on surrender conditions that they knew the Japanese wouldn't accept in order to experiment and drop these two bombs. They were two different technologies on these two cities. So pretty disingenuous. But of course, their propaganda machine rolled out the idea that it shortened the war and it saved lives. But of course, reality is somewhat different.
Yeah, and also, of course, the Russians were about to invade Japan, and this rather forestalled that as well.
Well, also, this was a Dresden all over again. People remember the firebombing of Dresden, which was on the Eastern Front of no military significance whatsoever in Germany. But by firebombing that city, knowing that the Russians were going to overrun that area a week or two later and see the devastation it was caused by Western aerial bombardment. So there was competition between the so-called Allies at that time, and Japan horribly was caught up in that same process. But we do the remembrance, so it's from 8:15, actually on the Saturday morning, through to Nagasaki, which was 2 minutes past 11 on the Tuesday. And what better way to respectfully have an act of remembrance to a quarter of a million dead, rather to talk about the roots of militarism and war and what we can do to campaign against it. So as you see, there were workshops on, well, basically Bristol. This is a coalition of peace groups, XRP's Bristol, Bristol CND, Bristol Against the Arms Trade, Christian Climate Action, and so on and so forth. So the workshops very much reflect those outlooks.
Okay, so I know you had a workshop on the Israeli nuclear weapons, and it would be nice to know. I mean, we're in a bizarre situation where all we hear about is we must stop Iran getting nuclear weapons. What we don't hear about is that the Israelis already have them.
Well, you put your finger on it. Well, exactly. Yeah. Proliferation with the aid of the West. It's a dirty game, and it's entirely reckless. So I hope you'll be able to hear from those speakers who have delved into it more than I have. But it's an interesting story. But I have met Mordecai Vanunu, who was the whistleblower, who was very savagely treated. I mean, he was in solitary confinement for like a decade or something. So how he managed to hang on to his marbles is incredible. But lovely guy. I've met him. But talking about the peace gathering, so if you're looking at the program like I am, sort of three or four workshops each afternoon, talks and workshops on nuclear weapons, nuclear power, the arms industry here in Bristol, and also the angle about climate change creates migration, creates famine, and that leads to war. A lot of these interconnected issues. Sunday morning had a very special event. Reverend Sue Parfitt, who's part of Christian Climate Action, came to conduct a communion service. And that was very special, and a first so far. So over the 3 years we've been running this, you know, it's gathering more supporters and more significant events. We've had speakers from the Old Maston Women's Peace Camp, definitely bigging up the whole Greenham Common movement, which, you know, as we all know, was the biggest women's peace movement in the world and was successful at booting out that particular generation of nuclear weapons from this country. So there's a lot that we talk about, and a lot of sharing of information.
What's the link with the climate? Because this is a, I mean, it seems like two separate issues, really. One is about over-militarization, and particularly nuclear weapons that we've been focusing on to do with Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But surely the climate is a separate business. And you know, for example, most talk about the climate points the finger at China as being the world's great polluter.
Well, yeah, on Alex Elliott, a general nuclear activist, float around Faslane Peace Camp and London and places where stuff's going on. So I can say for the UK, maybe not for other countries, but I can say with the nuclear, the push with nuclear power because of pricing and political attention will cause a very large deficit on the amount of carbon that we will emit by 2050. And that'll be due to the pricing, the time to build nuclear power, and also the fact that in some cases it's used to make the weapons itself. Yeah. So there's a lot of political pressure and secret stuff going on to proliferate nuclear power for certain elements of weapons.
I mean, one of the things that we hear regularly on our show is the way that the nuclear power industry is almost like an apprenticeship that many people in the weapons industry have to go through to learn the trade, in order to to sort of learn the skills through the nuclear power people to do the weapons work. And you know, this is an accepted career path, and it's a necessary career path. And also, of course, the actual plutonium itself for the weapons is produced in the power stations. I mean, we've got serious problems around here. So anyway, I just wonder, because a lot of the climate stuff, Alex, does tend to focus on nuclear as an actual solution. So I'm not sure how this sits well with the, Hiroshima Day.
There's, I'll just go back to your first point. In general, because of the slowness of nuclear power and the amount of gigawatts you get per billion pounds, which is eight times more if you do offshore wind, if you take these things into account, what we're now discovering is that these large oil companies are actually promoting nuclear because it means they will be able to sell oil for much longer into this century to Western countries. So there seems to be an underlying push for nuclear, even though
So how does that work then? How does nuclear help the oil business?
Because it's so expensive, and it prolongs renewables being built.
Yeah.
That the time you could have renewables, you're spending all your money on nuclear, which is way more expensive. So it causes a giant deficit in the amount of carbon that will be released. So oil companies like to now promote nuclear and be buddies with nuclear so they can sell oil for longer to create electricity.
Amazing. Well, I mean, can you just tell us, because you've been at the front line, as Roland has, up at Faslane, a bit about your experience up there. It's up on the west coast of Scotland, isn't it? And it's the main base for Britain's nuclear-armed submarines.
That's right. It's located in Gaelock Head, just near Helensburgh, on the 315 bus to the peace camp there. And we've been a constant resistance direct action camp for 40 years now. On a newbie, I've been there a year, and the history is great, the people's great, and the spirit's strong. And we're right on the doorstep, and we get to witness the UK's submarines and convoys there. And it makes it very real for us and gives us a drive to get out and spread the word that, you know, these things still exist, and we're now building more of them with the new deals from Boris. So we really need to up our game as a country.
Yeah, it does seem almost as if there's a new renewed threat from nuclear weapons. But look, Alex, what do you say to those that say, well, hang on a minute, because the mutual assured destruction, the fact that the Soviets and the Chinese have had these weapons as well as the Brits and the Americans, has kept the peace since World War II?
Well, I'd say to that if you wanna think about that, keeping the peace, for short periods of time, perhaps you may feel that rolling the dice is okay, but speaking to everyone in general, if you keep rolling these dice, you will come unstuck. And at the moment, we are at a higher risk of nuclear war than we were at the Cold War height.
Well,
and
why is
it's really serious. So I just say to people, do more research and really think about what nuclear weapons do.
Yeah, well, what I was saying is, why are we now at more of a risk of nuclear war?
Well, it's to do with many factors. One of them is, so you talk about MAD, which is mutually assured destruction. That was a simpler concept that everyone understood. But now with modernization and what they call integrated deterrence, they're trying to tailor these weapons to become smaller, usable, easier to use in threatening or provocative situations in a battlefield situation. And as there's no real clear merger between the old doctrines of MAD and the new idiotic ideas of tactical nuclear weapons, not strategic nuclear weapons, that we've reached a very, very dangerous point where people could think, a general could think, someone could think, oh, we could use this. They cross the threshold and there's no proper legislation, there's no clear plans on what to do with stuff. And obviously people use terms like retaliatory strikes. And, you know, basically, nuclear weapons are a different equation to everything else.
Well, I mean, and also then the Americans have torn up the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty, which doesn't help. I mean, these treaties which were put together in the Reagan-Thatcher era with Gorbachev, you know, these are the sorts of things that we kind of need, really. How do people follow what's going on at Faslane? Because in a way, this Hiroshima Day is just one day of the year when we should be thinking about Faslane all the time.
Well, Faslane, we're picking up now. We're doing music events up there. We have Facebook and stuff. We're building some websites. The general way to do it, if you're a peaced out traveller, just come right on up. We'll sort you out a caravan. We'll get you somewhere to stay, and you know, there's great food on all the time. And we're more than willing to take people in. We can expand. We've got loads of room, and it's all free. Well, £10 a week, Kitty. But if you don't have money, that's fine.
Wow. Okay, Roland and Alex, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks very much. Pleasure talking to you.